Greetings, ladies and gentlemen. My name is Christian Corley. I'm the editor of Casterbris.com, and I'm your hyper host for this Casterbris podcast with a K. It is 2012. We're in the future, so everything is mega zap and hyper. Hyper greetings to you all. And hyper greetings to Brian Terranova.
Hyper greetings to you.
And to James McLean.
Hyper greetings back at you. Blast off. I always imagine the future. You won't remember this, Brian, but you might, Christian, when ITV started doing their children's programs, Matthew Kelly was the first person to introduce them all. And he used to be in this little spaceship with these big, like TARDIS control knobs, you know, like the doorknob on the Legopolis TARDIS, all in front of him. And he used to use those to fly around. That's the future.
That is the future. Do you know, I'm scared. I mean, that's a suppressed memory.
It is, isn't it?
Probably due to Matthew Kelly. Yeah, that's right. We should move on from that, I think.
Yes.
I think I might have said something inappropriate. Have we got lawyers?
Oh, I don't think you actually specified anything. And actually, one of my relatives' friends was an actress, used to work with Matthew, and said he's an absolutely lovely guy. She's one of the nicest people to work with.
So. I'm delighted to know that.
Yeah.
The lawyers are happy now.
They are abated.
We are covered.
Good.
Cosmic.
Yes.
Hypercosmic, I think you'll find. This week's Cast Service podcast with a K. We're going to be discussing the wonderful surprise discovery of two Doctor Who episodes from the 1960s that were missing believed white.
And the surprise is how late we're covering it.
The surprise is indeed how late we're covering it, which is, of course, because we took a break, and then when we came back, it was the Doctor Who Christmas special.
Last year's news.
It is last year's news, yeah. Mm. It is. We're just so behind.
Well, we're historians, aren't we, from the future?
That's time travel for you.
That's right. That's right.
Indeed. So, where do we start with this? We're not going to tell you anything you don't already know, but we are going to talk about it and, you know, what we how we feel about it, what it means to us as fans, and the sort of general reaction to it and the fallout from it, if you like, because it isn't just a case of there's two new episodes. It's also a case of flipping heck. There's not only is a lot of missing stuff, there's a lot of missing stuff that might actually be gone forever now, we've since learned. So, back in December, we found out that we were going to get some new Doctor Who episodes, or some old Doctor Who episodes that have been rediscovered. They've been rediscovered in interesting circumstances at the Garden Fete in the 1980s, but the buyer didn't know what he'd bought, which is kind of what the BBC have been looking for years, isn't it, James? Sort of, people that have, archivists that have accidentally bought something.
They're paramount. I mean, even on a small scale, away from the actual big news like this, so much of the DVDs that we have now, the old stuff, a lot of the soundtracks are augmented by bits and bobs that fans have recorded off their TVs at the time onto tape recorders and are used to splice in to vamp up the quality. So, you know, these fans and hoping that fans have got this sort of stuff or people have got this sort of stuff has always been a part and parcel of what our output is, isn't it? Our Doctor Who output these days.
Yeah, indeed, yeah. Now, the chap who purchased the tapes, which was episode 3 of Galaxy 4 and episode 2 of The Underwater Menace, was a gentleman called Terry Burnett, who was a former TVS. Do you remember TVS?
Vaguely.
Yeah, all those ITV franchises. In the days when ITV was all local franchises rather than just ITV, TVS was South Coast, Southampton area. And he was an engineer from TVS. And he bought the episodes, not at Garden Fete, as I said earlier, but at a School Fete. And it was only recently that he passed them on to Ralph Montague, who's Radio Times head of heritage. I think we should also just mention Radio Times' part in this, because over the last couple of years, they've been building up a big archive on the Radio Times website of classic material, material related to classic broadcast. There's a load of Doctor Who stuff on there. It then went on, and on the Sunday, there was, this is Sunday the, December the 11th, Twitter started getting hot. Doctor Who related person started leaving very loaded clues. And then the whole thing was kind of leaked by SFX around half an hour before the episodes were screened. What is interesting, though, is the excitement around these two episodes from neither being particularly sought after or even loved serials. Mm. Would you say, Brian?
Not sought after or loved serials? Well,
you know, they're not the Daleks Master Plan.
Well, yeah, okay, yeah, fair enough. I'll give you that.
Yeah.
You know, I'll be honest, though, like my reaction to both of them, of course, was just, I was happy to see both of them just because I want to see as many of the missing ones as I can.
Sure.
But as much as I've always wanted to see more missing Troughton stories, I was kind of a little bit more excited by the William Hartnell one just because for some reason Galaxy 4 fascinates me a little bit. You know, like we know so little about it aside from listening to the surviving audio and so on. But I don't know, just something about it seems more interesting to me. So I was really looking forward to that.
I'm afraid I was more pedestrian. I was disappointed because there is so much great material that's missing. So much of, I know, easy say, Master Plan, Marco Polo,
Reign of Terror,
you know, stuff that I would absolutely love to see, or even stuff I'd love to see completed, like the Crusade. And for it to be Galaxy 4. And actually, Underwater Madness is a little exciting, but Galaxy 4, it's great, as Brian says, but you can't. If I was totally honest, I was a bit sort of, oh god.
Indeed. Now, later in the year, the episodes are going to be released by To Entertain, presumably in another Lost in Time style box set. And they're already.
I was just going to say, what do you think they're going to do with that? Do you think they're going to make a a release for these two, or do you think they're going to do an updated Lost in Time box set?
I don't think it's clear at the moment. Did they not find parts of something a couple of years ago, which they could also put in it, and then they can stick in a load of documentaries and maybe have them as completed with, I don't know, with bridging or something, or animation? I don't know. I mean, there's a lot of things going on at the moment, which we probably shouldn't talk about on air, just, you know, with things like reconstruction projects and people involved with those that we kind of know of, which might be related to that. I don't know specifically what they are related to. But obviously, if these were discovered in September and they've only been released in December, then, you know, there's 3 months there of lots of stuff that's gone on that we've reported on Cast Erebus, with, you know, like reconstruction projects and third-party companies working with the BBC and To Entertain and Big Finish. So whether or not these are all part of the same projects or not, we won't know until they're released. What I did want to talk about, though, is there's a few things happened after this information came to light. Obviously, everyone went, wow, this is great. If only it was Reign of Terror, Daleks Master Plan, etc. But there's also the sad side of it, isn't it? Or isn't there, I should say, where we discovered that there's a very high chance that a great number of missing episodes were lost while the BBC have been looking for them, potentially lost forever. What I'm talking about here is Sierra Leone, where there was a civil war throughout the 1990s. And a TV archive was destroyed in 1999. And we reported on this on the 17th, a few days after the news came out about the new episodes. New old episodes. It's easy to say they all went in 1999 and they were the last ones ever anywhere and we're never going to see them again. But I mean, do you really think that they could be the last ones?
The ones that were just discovered?
No.
Okay. You mean the ones from 1990?
Yeah, and in the civil
being destroyed. Yeah.
Yeah, potentially. So say there was like a good, at least a dozen, presumably, episodes that were in a TV archive in Sierra Leone. Now, not only were these episodes were destroyed, but I mean, the television archives for that entire country were destroyed as well. So, a lot of people lost their lives through the conflict. So, you know, there's the whole side of that. You know, let's not just get carried away with TV episodes. I mean, this is a big tragedy that this happened. But Do we really think that they were the only existing episodes of Doctor Who left on the planet in Sierra Leone, of all places?
I don't think so, personally. I mean, what about all that talk about Zimbabwe not that long ago? Was it Zimbabwe? If I've got the area right.
Now that might be... could that be Zimbabwe, or could that be the former Rhodesia?
Honestly, I don't remember the
Which
name.
Which is, of course, Paul James.
The president had major issues with Britain for the way that they feel that they were treated.
Yeah.
I don't remember the actual location. I'm trying to do it from memory now, unfortunately. But supposedly that there was belief that there was a lot of archived material.
Yeah,
there.
It's Rhodesia, which is now Zimbabwe. Yeah, yeah,
yeah, yeah.
Yeah, they they don't like us.
Very James, few people do.
Well, yes.
My point is that, you know, there's the hope that something is there. Who knows if we'll ever actually get to it. But then, you know, thinking about like the big archive anywhere, period. We found two of them in someone's garage, you know, and that's not even the last time it happened. I mean, look what happened to the War Games. You know, they had a copy that they were using for years on our VHS copies and for airing on TV and so on. And then they found that the actual master copy was the one that was in the BFI, am I thinking the right place, was there, you know. So all this time they had the actual aired copy, but they weren't using it until finally when the DVD came out, they realized their mistake. So I mean, like, I just think there are these copies, like, tons of places. I mean, this guy had these copies since the 80s and he didn't once check the canisters, you know what I mean? Like there's got to be tons more people out there that just buy these films and say, look, I've got these old films, isn't that cool, and then never looks at them.
Yeah, well, that's something I was going to get onto, actually.
Scrolling through it.
Because you've got this whole situation where we're just looking for Doctor Who, and Doctor Who enthusiasts are just looking for Doctor Who. And Doctor Who's one TV program. It's a popular program with a good regular audience and a cult following at the same time, but it is just one TV program. And I mean, if we think about the number of tapes that are created just in the UK of TV shows, and the size of archives that we know about, such as Bob Monkhouse, who was a comedian here, Brian, died a few years ago, he had a massive archive. He had a garden shed that had a basement dug just as an archive. I don't think it was much of a shed, really, in the end either. I think it was more of a second building. You know, the whole situation there is, it is a needle in a haystack. Everything is a needle in a haystack.
But is there an argument as well that haystack will naturally be getting smaller as entropy and quality degradation and people throwing stuff out, and, as we've said, businesses or political struggles causing stuff to be removed and deleted? So in a sense, the further we get away, the lower the chances are going to be that we'd certainly ever get a full recovery. I would imagine we'll probably get a couple more episodes or clips, certainly. I think there's a likelihood in that. But
I feel the same there, yeah.
I think the longer it's taking, the less chance it's...
I think it'd be nice if we got just completed serials out of... If anything else is going to be found, it's just something that completes a few...
Yeah.
Few... final serials, yeah.
I agree with that, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I was watching... Strangely enough, I got The Lost Tales for Christmas, which I never got before. So I was... I primarily wanted it simply, actually, for The Crusade, because I'd seen it on VHS before, but I just, being a big William Russell fan, I really wanted to have his intro bits, and after having his audio adaption of the book and listening to that, I wanted to see the serial. I was just watching that, just thinking, you know, it's just need those two episodes. Well, you know, all it needs, and then that's complete, and it'd be just so nice to have that released, touched up. And Marco Polo. I think Marco Polo is the one that I'm most desperate to see, and obviously the most unlikely, because it's a big story.
Yeah.
That's the one. I was about you guys. What missing ones would be your ultimate dream?
I'll let Brian go first.
I really wanted to see Enemy of the World. Very much, because I've listened to it on the narrated audio. I believe Fraser Hines does that one, but it was just a really interesting story to me. I liked all the characters in it, and I liked the setup. And it's not even the fact that Patrick Troughton plays two roles, which is cool. It just seemed like it was a neat story. It was very different from the rest in some ways for me. So I'd really like to see that one again. I guess with William Hartnell, I don't know. I mean, there's so many of them, but I would probably have to go with Dog's Master Plan. Something about that one just is really pulling me in. It's the only one that's like coming to mind.
I've got a couple. I'd like to see The Invasion finished off. If there was you know, two more missing episodes to come, then finish off The Invasion. I would like to see Dalek's Master Plan, though, from beginning. I'd like to be able to sit down and watch Dalek's Master Plan from beginning to end, which interestingly allows us to just quickly remind our listener of Rick Lundeen's comic project for the Dalek's Master Plan, in which he's recreating every episode in comic strip format, which will then be released weekly on a Saturday tea time on Casterbris in the summer of 2013, leading up to the 50th anniversary, which is pretty cool. Mm. I'm looking forward to that, actually. I'm looking forward to that a lot. And I've already seen some of it, and it looks great. And Rick does excellent Daleks as well, and Dalek machinery, so we should all be excited about that. And also, I'm sure Rick won't mind me mentioning this. He sent me an email a couple of weeks ago of a BBC, in inverted commas, report on the phenomenon of detecting radio waves from outer space that are bouncing back off an object and finding missing Doctor Who episodes. Unfortunately, it's an April Fool's joke from 2009. Now, when I received it, and I noticed a few other people were sort of talking about it on Twitter, someone posted it on a Casterbris comment, and I saw it on Facebook as well. If you have seen it, dear listener, it's not real. It isn't possible with our current technology to detect radio waves bouncing back off objects from 1965. It would be rather wonderful, though, wouldn't it, chaps?
Oh, God, yeah. I mean, especially that's what we're doing on our spaceship right now, trying to prove that we can actually make it happen, you know, with our future technology that is totally mega warp right now.
Oh, galactic, man, galactic. While we're talking about radio waves, I'll talk about radio. Something that has actually really irritated me again this week is iPlayer has been running the Hornet's Nest audio series. Mm-hmm. And again, like so much of their radio stuff, I've not seen any promotions for it anywhere. Did I miss it? Was it on Casterbris?
We did mention it on Casterbris, yes, but I only mentioned it on Casterbris because I'm friends with Paul Miles on Facebook and he put it on his wall. But you're absolutely right, there hasn't been any promotion that I've been aware of.
I mean, I've got the first one, I bought the first one, and I've always been half tempted to get the rest. I can't pretend that I thought it was beautifully done, but they didn't feel quite right to me. And it being a whole serial, I wasn't that keen on buying the whole lot. And then to see that it had been running on iPlayer or on radio, obviously. And
it was on Six Music. It was on BBC Radio 7, which is now called Radio 4 Extra for some.
Well, the Radio 7, Radio reason. 4 Extra obviously do a lot of stuff. I mean, I caught their robot. They've done it several times, robot, on the audio adaption. And you can catch that. And then they even did some of the Big Finish stuff, the stuff with Janet Fielding.
They did the Paul McGann stuff a few years ago as well.
Indeed, and they do a lot of stuff, and it really gets so little promotion, which is a kind of a shame because, you know, the classic era is a big industry, as the DVDs prove, and it really could get a little bit more of a nudge, I think. You know, it's a shame that everything, you know, on the mainstream BBC is so dominated by the new series, understandably to a degree, despite Moffat's rather grumbly announcement about how they don't look out for his ratings a few days after the Christmas special. You know, generally speaking, that they really pushed the Doctor there, but the rest of the Doctor Who seems to really get lost, which is a bit of a pity.
It is a shame, but then again, I mean, it's maybe something to do with the state of how the BBC are looking at that particular radio station.
Because
it started off as BBC Radio 7, didn't it? Then when they were talking about cutting back and reshaping and everything, they decided to call it Radio 4 Extra. I mean, what is the point of calling it Radio 4 Extra? There's already a Radio 4. There wasn't a Radio 7. why not just leave it as Radio 7 rather than adding another station to an existing station, thereby still having seven radio stations? It's going into a different conversation.
Indeed. In fact, most of it will probably be edited out. Yeah.
And that's why I like the missing episodes.
Yeah, it's funny about Galaxy 4, because a few months ago I was saying to Christian how we should do a bring back the Chumblies for the new series and do a campaign to bring the Chumblies back. And maybe now this is a time more than ever.
That, is this the time, is it?
Well, I mean, people will now be exposed to the power of the Chumblies, and it might quantifiably strengthen our campaign to bring back.
That sounds quite uncomfortable, I have to say.
Our lovely, such a loved monster.
Yeah,
I mean, Brian. Yeah. Brian's probably our first supporter. He says he finds Galaxy 4 fascinating.
I honestly do. I think it partially is to do with the Chumblies. It's partially to do with the Darvellans or whatever they're called. Darvins. All I know is when I heard the story on audio, I just found it kind of interesting. I liked the idea that these races were kind of trapped, and you were supposed to think that I don't want to ruin the story for people, but you were supposed to think one thing versus the other. And I don't know. I just liked it. I like Steven and I like Vicky. They're good companions. I like them with the Doctor, and I like certain aspects of the story. I like the fact that Vicky kind of names the Chumblies, and I think, however, if we do bring the Chumblies back into the new series, it'll be just like the Susan naming the acronym for TARDIS all over again. You know, they'll probably just call the Chumblies in the new series, and then Vicky's cute little nickname for them won't be her own thing. It'll be what they always were called. She just miraculously called them that as well.
Could we spin it off? Because it does have a sort of a sound of a British sitcom feel to it.
The Chumblies.
Yeah, soap opera maybe, a soap.
Nice. No. Yeah, we could do that. It'll work about as well as that little skit with the Dalek coming home to his wife.
The Spike Milligan one.
Work about as well as the Royal Bodyguard.
Hey, what's that?
It's an absolutely horrific sitcom that started last week on BBC, which starred David Jason, who is a sort of veteran comic, or comedy actor, I should say. He's not the problem with it. He did very well with used toilet paper thin material. Is the script is absolutely horrific. Absolutely dreadful. It was kind of Johnny English.
And that's why I loved the missing episodes.
One thing I will have to say, I rewatched the Doctor, the Widow and the Wardrobe the other day, and I enjoyed it a lot more on my second run through it.
You know, here's a thought, James, sorry to cut you off. You finish your thought, then I'll do mine. I apologize. I'm totally
that is my thought.
Okay, good. Here's my thought. We have what missing stories would you like to have back?
Yeah.
How about what stories would you like to go missing?
I thought about that earlier, but I thought it was such an easy answer.
Let's do it.
All right. Who starts? Oh,
good point. I have so many to go with. Christian
okay,
starts.
I'll start. Yeah. Time and the Rani. Just the most embarrassing pile of... And you know, some bits of Doctor Who were crap when they were first aired, like that one, and they kind of get better, or you can overlook them in time. You know, there's that nonsense in Time Lash with Perry going, "Look, it's Joe Grant," on the wall and all that nonsense. But you can kind of overlook that because the rest of it, there's some interesting stuff going on, and if you're not interested in the other interesting stuff going on, you've got Paul Darrow chewing the scenery.
Yes.
Which is always good. But with Time and the Rani, it has no redeeming features. It's just an absolute waste of space. And, you know, there's people have been shot for worse than what Pip and Jane Baker did with Time and the Rani. I haven't finished. New Earth can go and eat my big, hairy coconuts. If I never have to watch New Earth again, it'll be too soon. I've forced myself to watch it on numerous occasions for sitting through the entire season, you know, the marathons. I didn't like it at the time. I've just lost the will to ever watch it again. It just turns the entire idea of Doctor Who into a body swapping movie. And you know, after what we'd had with the episode prior to that and what we get with the episode straight after it, it's just ridiculously poor.
And it's his first proper story too, and you don't let him
such a weak
be himself stuff. In it, you know?
Yeah.
That was a mistake, yes, I can see.
Yeah. More?
Well, yeah, have you got any more? You sound like you've got more.
I'll leave it there for now.
James?
Horns of Nymon. I know it has a reputation. Listening to the commentary, I think the people who worked on it, it found good stuff in it, and I respect that. But really, is it? I think that is worse than Time in the Rani. I don't think even Tom Baker can save that. It's just an absolute mess, and part of the mess, I'm afraid, is Tom's indulgence in it. And not saying that I think Time in the Rani is any good. But I do remember as a kid finding the tetraps and the exploding mines actually quite effective. It's the only thing that they've got really going in it. But I really do agree that Pip and Jane Baker really should not have been allowed near a Doctor Who script. They just didn't have the feel for it. Mm. New series wise, Let's Kill Hitler. I would like to be reduced to a small little intro sequence by William Russell as Ian Chesterton, regaling the reader like he does in the Crusade about an adventure that he thankfully was never on and never heard of, and wouldn't it be awful if it actually happened? So that's the one out of the new series I think I would have to bludgeon quite significantly. I think those, I'll stick to two like Christian did. Brian?
Two? Okay, well, I can narrow myself down to two. Let's go with Paradise Towers.
Ooh, crikey. Ooh.
Yeah, because I don't know what it is. Every time I watch that one and I see the main villain become this horribly pink dressed fascist, it's just kind of like, what the hell just happened here?
Yeah, you never grew up in the 1980s in the UK. That's what this is all about, I think.
Yeah, that, gotta be something with that. But I don't know, something about that story. The Kangs annoy me. That Peck's guy annoys me. Mel is annoying. You know, and even the Doctor hasn't found his footing yet, unfortunately. But there are some good qualities. But
it's scary because, I mean, a British person, I can understand not liking that because of the strong Richard Brize association, and he doesn't really he's not really considered villain material, and he still isn't. So I can understand that, but for an American who's not so heavily saturated with Briars as he was in the 80s, it's interesting that that is one that you really find hard.
Yeah, I do find that hard.
I mean, there are funny things about it, but, you know, it resonates with different people in different ways. People who maybe were, you know, that kind of slightly lost generation, or, you know, people who grew up in tower blocks.
Are
in that sort of vicinity, you're going to draw something from it that maybe other people won't. I mean, personally speaking, I never even saw a tower block of flats until I was about 15.
You see, Spider-Man made me want to live in them because, you know, there's a few when I used to live in Leighton in London. There was a couple of, you know, high rise, and I lived in a small flat with my family in a rented one. And when I looked at the high rise, I thought they'd be really cool to live in because that's the sort of thing you'd see in a Spider-Man comic. But no, I don't think it was. Problem with Paradise Towns for me was a logistical one, is that I could never get over the fact that I could see no way that those cleaners could ever actually pick anyone up and put them into their, into their trolley, which I know is a very superficial argument, but that to me really, really bugged me as a kid. I used to have to imagine there was a gas that paralyzed you and got indoctrinated you into actually getting into the back of the car for him because there's no way to that claw. Terrible design. But I quite liked Pex. I liked Pex. I liked the ending. Briars was a bit rubbish. And yeah, you're right, McCoy wasn't quite there yet. But to me, it was better than Time in the Rani. So what's your second one?
My second one's a new series one, probably no surprise to anyone, but it's Love and Monsters. However, what I would say is I don't want the story to be completely gone. I want it to be one of those ones that we find surviving clips.
Oh, that's smart. Oh, I love
that. And the clips are just the scenes with Elton and Jackie. Those are the only necessary clips that need to be found. You know, even the stuff with the Doctor and the Rose kind of blinking in every now and again, they're kind of cool, kind of all right moments. But no, just those ones, because that's where the meat of the story is. That's where the good parts of the story was. Everything else can be lost, because then when you see those clips, you have this great perception of what this episode might have actually been like. And your perception is going to be 1,000 times better than the episode actually ever was. So that's what I would like to have happen. Have that story go missing, except, you know, we'll find some clips a couple years from now and be like, wow, what a great episode this probably was. And, of course, we'd be very wrong. But still, that would be a great way to remember it.
That's a really nice idea. I like that. What episode did you have removed, but just have clips to make you feel it was better than it was? That is really cool. That's something that should go on the forum for people.
I think you'll find that as Mega Zap, actually.
Yes,
Mega Zap indeed.
That's ice hot. Little high for happiness on that one. I like it. Oh, that's a really good idea. I'm now racking my brains because you see, Let's Kill Hitler. There's nothing in there that I could as a little clip, and Horns
possibly
of Time
just
on
hunting Hitler. I don't know, something about that I still like.
Yeah, you could just destroy the entire episode except for that bit.
And telling Hitler to shut up.
Different, doesn't it?
Yeah.
You just, you know, if that's all you've got, then that's an entirely different story. That's a legend. That's a television legend.
Yeah, I guess so. I mean, I suppose I'd seen stuff do that before. I remember in 2000 AD, the British comic Strontium Dog, Johnny Alpha goes back to arrest Hitler for his crimes. And that's, if you ever managed to catch that, it's a very amusing belittlement of the character, of the villainous
man. Well, I don't know if it was the first or not, but of course Captain America did that, in the...
Yes. And Superman.
Comics,
you know? I still have it somewhere where Superman in the 40s in the war strips, he goes
back.
But
the thing is they're superheroes. You know, here you have Rory. He's just the ordinary guy. He's faced with Hitler. He not only punches him, but he tells him to shut up as well. You know, like, he's not taking any crap from him. And it's a character that most people thought was very weak. You know, and here I think it was a brilliant moment for him.
See, that's what always gets me. Is that people like, I always find people like Rory, I find so much stronger than Amy, even though Amy is given the very hero part and the hero reaction. People like Rory always seem stronger to me because they seem so much more real, so much more genuine and honest. Honest people, I think, are far stronger characters. And there's something we lose in TV a bit, that the cool characters, the sassy characters become dominant, and the actual genuine ones we sort of see as weak. And
Well, I totally agree with you on that, because I felt the same about Rory. I thought he was more of an interesting, kind of more realistic and stronger character. Amy, they kind of played like she had a lot of brashness and a lot of attitude to her. But it seemed like, I don't know if they, like, it, to me, it seemed like it was at first supposed to be her way of surviving these odd things that she was doing, just by like acting like it didn't faze her. But then we never got to see that it actually did faze her. You know, it was just always like it was a big non-event to her in some ways. And I didn't believe that, you know. It seemed like there should have been more to her character, but Rory, we certainly got more. And you know what, that's a thing too, going through the past of the show, Doctor Who has always done, with the exception of possibly Adric, male companions very well. I mean, even Turlough could be argued to be a very interesting male companion. He had facets to him.
I love Turlough. Stephen, is odd, because Stephen's one that you said that you liked. I really never found anything redeeming in Stephen at all. He just seemed very cardboard to me. So it's interesting that you enjoyed him.
I think Peter Purvis does a lot with what he's got, which isn't very much.
But he hasn't really got anything. I mean, to be fair, though, Ian lost a lot by season two.
Yeah,
his strength is really in season one, where he's actually given a far more driving force. By season two, there's this sort of like retcon where they all suddenly think the Doctor is this most amazing person who always gets them out of fixes, when in the end it really used to be Ian.
It really
Barbara.
Was them, yeah.
But
you know, Ian, Jamie, and Harry were always my three favorites.
Yes, absolutely.
For many different reasons, but they were always the best. I mean, I did enjoy Stephen. I did enjoy Peter Purvis, but you're right. I mean, the strengths were in those three characters, certainly. But I like Christian said, I think Peter Purvis did a lot with what he had, and I just liked the portrayal, because it seemed like the character had life to him, to me. Like, he could have a laugh, and he could be serious, you know, and he could understand danger and so on. And that's something that we didn't even get with Rose. Look at series two, Rose, you know. I've mentioned this before. The Doctor is, like, talking about in the Satan pit how dire everything is, and he looks like he's terrified, where Rose is laughing it off. It's kind of like, where's the realism there? It's just missing, you know?
Yeah.
But with those male characters, I mean, certainly there was the most life was in Ian, Harry, and Jamie.
I mean, the strength in Rory, I find, is, I think this is where I find strength in that sort of character, is that while I don't agree with waiting for someone for 2,000 years, I think, you know, that sort of romantic notion is ridiculous. I think it's, you would never imagine she would do that. Not because she couldn't. I just imagine her being interested in something else and wandering off onto another adventure. there's a sort of a tenacity of spirit in Rory, sort of a that's meant to be genuine rather than stalkerish, that is so strong, and I think people miss. And Amy, I'd imagine within 4 years would have fallen for someone else and be on another, wandering around the globe on meeting different people. But he's stuck by that character. And I think that's just such a powerful character.
Chaps.
Yeah.
We're talking about companions.
Oh crap, we are, aren't we? That's next week.
Mm. Whoops. And that's why I like the missing episodes. All right, moving on.
Well, I'm sure we can expand on it. We've got what, almost 50 years worth of companions. I'm sure
we're
sure.
Oh, yeah. I guess.
And what companions would you like to go see missing?
Okay. Let me start. All right. Well, that brings us to the end of this week's Casterbus podcast with a K, ladies and gentlemen. Sorry, I got that wrong, didn't I? That brings us to the end of this week's Casterbus podcast with a K, dear listener.
There we go. Or ladies, lady or gentlemen.
No, we discovered it's a lady.
Oh, it's a lady. Oh,
it's a lady, yes. She commented on one of the threads saying how I was looking forward to...
No, because we had a gentleman tweet you this week about sound quality.
So we've got two listeners.
We have actually two listeners for 2012.
Hurrah! That's Megazap.
That is.
Excellente. Oh, that's coolio. Right, well, listeners, perhaps you could get together. I don't know. And then create a third. Anyway, that's the end of this week's Casterbus podcast with a K.
Hyper podcast. Get it right, man.
Sorry. Hyper podcast with a K. We'll be back next week when we'll be discussing Doctor Who companions. Until next time, take care and goodbye.